Welcome back. It's a Wednesday hump day in more ways than one. 18 October 2023. I'm your host, Mark Holland. I guess we have to start out by noting that the mumbling and bumbling and stumbling toward a nuclear escalation of World War III continues, but thankfully it's not going quite as fast as some had hoped it would. What we're seeing instead is an embarrassment of international scope in the Middle East. As the senile guy that literally nobody wants to meet with, and even those that might agree to sit with him on stage for a few minutes and watch him squirm, are only looking for the usual few billion bucks. But even all of that, embarrassing as it is just a sideshow, because the real news, or real lies, seem to be coming from a missile attack, or was it a bomb? Allegedly carried out by Israel, but maybe it was allegedly carried out by Hamas, but maybe it was really somebody else blaming any of the above. Maybe we're not even sure if there was actually anybody killed at all. You know what, folks? It's true. Truth is the first casualty of war, and there is so much smoke around this one that it's almost impossible to tell what really happened, much less who really did it. But at least we can still ask the most important question, quo bene. One thing we know for sure, there are plenty of people that would want as many people as possible dead, and they don't care who did it, they just want an escalation. And that looks like, one way or another, that is indeed eventually what we're going to see. Meanwhile, though, we're seeing headlines like this, and sometimes there are retractions, sometimes not. Protesters are storming various Israeli embassies in places like Jordan and Turkey after the reported IDF airstrike on a hospital in Gaza supposedly killed over 500 people, according to the Health Ministry of Gaza. Other stories say the governments of Egypt, Turkey, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Lebanon, and even Communist Canada have condemned the strike on the hospital as a violation of international law. There's actually a couple stories out now that I've seen saying it wasn't the hospital that was bombed, it was the parking lot, and no, 500 people didn't die. Israel is, to no one's surprise, claiming they didn't do it, and the evidence suggests, well, they may not have. It might have been a failed rocket launched by Palestinian terrorists shot at Israel that went awry and took out, well, whatever it was that got taken out. The Daily Mail is at least open to that possibility. Their coverage says one Israeli television station has revealed footage claiming that the rocket that struck the hospital was fired from Gaza and malfunctioned in midair moments before that devastating explosion that may or may not have killed hundreds. They've got a follow-up story headlined, "Analyzing Israel's proof," and they put it in quotes, that it wasn't behind the hospital bloodbath. Experts examine IDF's dossier of evidence, including images of the misfiring rocket, lack of the crater, and shrapnel on the roof. They admit that the evidence provided by the IDF suggests Israel was not behind the brutal hospital blast. They quote a number of forensic experts, one of them, RUSI aerial warfare analyst Justin Bronk, who agreed with the statements from the IDF and wrote, "No crater or obvious shrapnel pattern consistent with IAF JDAM Mark 80 serial bombs is visible. Still not conclusive, but if this is the extent of the damage, I'd say an airstrike looks less likely than a rocket failure causing the explosion and fuel fire." Joel Rayburn, director of the American Center for Levant Studies, said, "There's no bomb crater here and nowhere near the destruction that would be required to cause," unquote, "those hundreds of deaths. The initial reports of an airstrike that allegedly killed hundreds of people," he continued, "are not plausible given this physical scene." Even the New York Times is admitting they don't exactly know what happened here. Their headline says, "The day after a deadly blast killed hundreds of people at that Gaza City hospital, the Biden Fuhrer," and no, that's not the term they use, "met with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and supported Israel's assertion that it had nothing to do with the explosion." Of course, Biden later backtracked and said he wasn't sure, but hey, who's kidding who, folks? He isn't sure whether his diapers need changed or not. Before all of that, though, and arguably not really as related as they'd have you believe, just as Air Force One was departing Washington for Israel, the White House announced that the entire leg of Biden's trip to Jordan had been canceled. The confirmation was issued, says Zero Hedge's coverage, within the same hour that Arab leaders announced that they were unwilling to meet with the senile guy, given, or so they claimed, that the U.S. is Israel's biggest funder and supporter. What they didn't say, but your host will at least suggest, is, why meet with the senile puppet when they could probably have a Zoom call with Obama and not have to sit in the same room with the flatulence? But still, folks, as I mentioned up front, the real question is, who benefits? And if you look at the news this morning, and Zero Hedge has provided a nice summary for us, it's pretty obvious. Wednesday is shaping up to be quite a day of rage, says their 2100 Eastern Time update, following a series of clips from major cities around the world and all kinds of Arab solidarity. They have video of uprising, riots, and protests in Istanbul, Beirut, Amman, Jordan, Qatar, Tehran, Iran, Barcelona, Spain, Cairo, Egypt, Yemen, and even Berlin, Greece, and Montreal. And the story suggests that U.S. embassies in several of those places may not be the best locales to hang out. One other thing, though, that we can say with complete confidence, U.S. incompetence on the world stage isn't helping, at least when it comes to avoiding World War III, in the slightest. Here's a telling clip, courtesy of the Gateway Pundit, from the Biden Führer himself, and this time I think we can be confident it's the real one, because why would you put in a body double to fumble the football like this? And as to what he actually said, well, I really doubt Bibi Netanyahu cared, and I don't think even the leftist press can spin this one. What did he say? Well, your guess is as good as mine, but here we go.
You know, years ago I asked the Secretary of State when he and I were working in the Senate to write something for me, and he said, he wrote a line that I think is appropriate. He said, it's not, we lead, not just, well, I won't go into it, I'll wait later. Taking too much time.
Yeah, and he's taking up too much space, too. And as I was putting that together, folks, I realized something that my grandmother would have probably said quite a few decades ago at this point. Be careful not to disrespect the President of the United States or the office. And I realize that has nothing whatsoever to do with what we're talking about here, given a regime that not only disrespects the United States, the rule of law, and the American people, but in this case, the whole stinking world, by rubbing stuff like this in their face. This is worse than a joke, and sadly the punchline is nuclear war. Which brings me to another one of those, I guess you could call them, sadly, representative stories about what's really important in the once-free United States, especially when it comes to not only destroying the rule of law, but making it very clear that the First Amendment is even deader. The Department of Just Us says a piece by Alicia Powell for the Gateway Pundit on Monday appealed the sentences of the five leaders of the Proud Boys that were convicted in the circus trials for the January 6th Fed surrection in an attempt to, guess what, pile on and add even more years to the unprecedented high prison sentences for non-crimes, non-violent offenses, and justify in the process even harsher penalties for anybody that dares to contradict the regime about the, installation of a fake senile puppet in the place of an elected president. Oh yeah, don't you doubt that they're sending a message, all right. If you recall, on September 5th, U.S. District Court Judge, sick, Timothy Kelly, sentenced Henry Enrique Tarrio, the only January 6th defendant who was not even in Washington, D.C. on that date, to 22 years in prison, the longest sentence handed to any one of the non-criminals to date among the hundreds and hundreds of criminal cases stemming from that Capitol tour that looks especially tame compared to just about any footage of BLM or Antifa over the last couple of years. Showcasing the demise of the First Amendment, Kelly sentenced Ethan Nordine to 18 years in the federal gulag, Joe Biggs to 17 years, Rail to 15 years, and Pozzola to 10. Sentences that once upon a time might have been handed to mass murderers and real terrorists. But nowadays, of course, they walk free. Still, the Just Us Department in the swamp isn't satisfied with shipping Tarrio and his co-defendants off to a maximum security prison for more than two decades. The persecutors are back asking for even more because, you know, when it comes to MAGA, incarceration in the gulag obviously just isn't enough. Says the story, U.S. Assistant Attorney Jason McCulloch alerted the court of the Just Us Department's plan to demand more prison time. But, interestingly, the notice of appeal didn't even include any actual legal arguments. I guess we're beyond those, too. And I guess they don't have houses, yachts, or jets, so nothing there to steal either. Meanwhile, though, the heart of the swamp is showing us that, just like they did on January 6th, they're not about to allow the American people to have a say in anything even remotely resembling the government of a free people. Jim Jordan has lost his second vote to become Speaker of the House, chortled a number of leftist headlines this morning, and two more rhinos this time are back swimming with the other crocs. TGP and others have the entire list. One of the worst of the scumbags, Mike Kelly, even cast a vote for John Boehner to kind of rub people's noses in it, I guess. I guess, any way you look at this one, folks, it's getting harder and harder to deny that it's pretty clear what they really intend to do to the American people. Steve Bannon weighed in with some inside baseball on the swamp, During an interview with Tea Party Patriots founder Jenny Beth Martin on his War Room show Wednesday morning, as the churn in the swamp continues, said Bannon, quote, I have spies everywhere. Folks were calling me last night from the Capitol Grill, which is the worst of the worst, and the lobbyists were literally walking around cutting deals with people at the tables. They said a couple of people that are going to be added to this, they were in full view, maybe having a few adult beverages, cutting deals with the lobbyists to vote against Jordan. And how bad is it? I guess the point is, the sausage no longer has to be made in smoke-filled rooms behind closed doors. Oh yeah, and speaking of which, I guess this is apropos and certainly fits here. The Biden fuel regime is putting the finishing touches, as a piece from Zero Hedge and Tyler Durden, on yet another foreign aid pork package that would allocate this time around 100 billion newly printed fiat bucks in U.S. funds to Ukraine, Israel now, and other, quote, top security priorities, according to ABC News, citing people familiar with the details, probably the same ones Bannon was just referring to. Admits Bloomberg, quote, the sheer scope and ask of the package is likely to invite resistance, gee, do you think, in the House, where GOP differences on spending cuts, sick, and foreign aid have played out in the speaker fight. Said the top commie in the Senate from New York, Chuck E. Schumer, he expects the Biden Fuhrer to send the $100 billion request by, quote, the end of this week, and that the aid to Israel would include, listen to this and try not to throw up, folks, military, diplomatic, intelligence, and humanitarian aid, unquote. Yeah, you heard that right. Intelligence aid. The mind boggles. Meanwhile, your host can't help but suggest that the big takeaway from what we saw in Israel is, even in a country where they did have a border wall and where they allegedly had intelligence that was supposed to be preventing people from coming in and committing acts of terrorism, all it took was just a little diversion for a few hours, maybe a stand down to help out when it was really needed, and look what just a few Hamas terrorists were able to do, oh so rapidly, or so we're told. Imagine, folks, if they were coming in at the rate of who knows how many thousands per day and bringing who knows what, and I guarantee you, if there is intelligence in the United States, it sure as hell isn't telling the American people what's coming across that border. Remember, they didn't even want you to know about the laptop from hell. Well, imagine what those hundreds of thousands, no, millions of potential terrorists could do, given the unlimited time and abilities that they've already had in a country like the United States, where the infrastructure is just ripe for the plucking. Why, look how easy it was to shut down I-25 just south of Denver. The interstate's still closed 3 days now after the, we don't know what caused it, train derailment, but it could have been a rail problem. Gee, do you think? And the Denver Compost literally hardly even notices it anymore on their website. And how bad is the situation, folks? And how bad is it likely to get? Well, here's at least one clue. The Wall Street Journal, who could have thought it, has a story up today that asks in the headline, who counts as a disaster prepper these days? Lots of us. More people, it says, are prepping for a few weeks of flood, fire, or other urgent situations by buying supplies to get them through. Yep, disaster preparedness. Once the province of fringe groups, right-wing extremists, and so-called preppers, convinced that doomsday was at hand, now has a new face. And guess what, folks? That new face is still being soft-pedaled because while they'll admit, yeah, something may not be quite right, they're not about to tell you the whole story, or for that matter, any of it that will matter until, as we've said before, it's way too late. And I guess this is a good way to connect the dots as we start to wrap things up for this one. One of several stories I've seen lately comparing the, well, attack, war, which is called treason if you actually read the Constitution, against the American citizenry with what's being done to, say, foreign invaders, comes from Victor Davis Hanson. He called it the subordinate citizen and begins by noting he recently led a group of about 100 people on a tour of Israel for nearly 2 weeks, all of them U.S. citizens. But before returning to the United States, the participants had to indicate their booga booga vaccination status and take a COVID-1984, admittedly bogus though, PCR test in order to be allowed to re-enter their own country. Anxiety swept the group as the testers swabbed them, because anybody testing positive would have to delay his or her return, probably spend thousands of dollars finding scarce hotel accommodations, living expenses, and rebooking airline tickets, depending upon the length of their mandatory sequestration. So, he says, think about it. Contrast that with the tens of thousands, or arguably hundreds of thousands, of foreign nationals now mustering south of the border to cross illegally across the border of the once sovereign United States. and they follow on the heels of the already 2 million who've entered the country unlawfully since the puppet masters for the Biden-Fuhrer rigged and stole the election. He asked it this way, does any foreign national actually worry about being tested for COVID-19, or for that matter anything else, much less fear being turned away if he tests positive or lacks proof of vaccination? Of course not! So isn't it funny that we scrutinize far more carefully actual legal U.S. citizens re-entering what they thought was their own country legally than we do non-citizens invading our country unlawfully? And for that matter, let's consider the government is still determined to fire thousands of federal workers and, of course, U.S. military personnel who have refused to take the mandated poison poke, a.k.a. DNA mods known as mRNA not vaccinations. Most citizens who have declined to be vaccinated fear, rightfully, that the injections are dangerous. Basically untested, except on guinea pigs who are showing that they should never have been emergency use authorized to begin with. Certainly ineffective in preventing COVID-19 infections, and that they wouldn't necessarily, no, not ever, lead to herd immunity. So you gotta ask, are 2 million unvaccinated foreigners arriving unaudited from impoverished countries less of a threat somehow during the pandemic than fully audited American citizens employed by the federal government? Why would we fire unvaccinated Americans, but welcome equally unvaccinated illegal invaders? Well, there is a reason, folks. We've talked about it here for a long time. But he's working up to it, and actually quite nicely, too. Remember how the now Biden-Fuhrer blasted President Trump's southern border wall, and then, when the opportunity arose, canceled all further funding for it? But the same team just approved $40 billion to Ukraine to ensure that its border isn't porous against Russia, and their aggression. And that $40 billion would have completed the entire southern border wall several times over. Furthermore, he doesn't say this, but I will, other analysts have noted that the weaponry that's being sent to Ukraine will in fact diminish what the United States has for its own defense. And maybe that's a big part of the equation anyway. I guess, after all, if you're going to kill off a bunch of soldiers, sailors, and Marines, you really don't need weapons for them to use to defend a country you intend to destroy from within, right? So, he says, any rational observer might conclude that the U.S. government intends to uphold the universal idea of natural sovereignty, internationally recognized borders, and the security of citizens inside its own country, well, at least as long as they're not natural-born American citizens. There are currently, he has, over 550 sanctuary jurisdictions established by state and local governments, or at least those now masquerading as them. And they aim, or so they say, to prevent federal immigration authorities from deporting illegal alien invaders, including tens of thousands detained by law enforcement for committing any number of heinous additional crimes, from rape to murder. The United States hasn't experienced such blatant nullification of federal law, arguably since the pre-Civil War era, or maybe the 1960s when Southern governors defied federal efforts to enforce civil rights legislation. But he asks another important question. Can any citizen now simply vote to declare their hometown or their local county immune from federal legislation? Now, full stop here just for a second, and ironically, I have to note, back when we had a rule of law, there was something called 16 Amsure Section 177, which told us that an unconstitutional statute is, although having the form and name of law, in reality, no law at all. It's wholly void, ineffective for any purpose whatsoever, and is thus inoperative. Void, not real law. No one's bound to obey an unconstitutional law. No courts are bound to enforce it. Well, suffice it to say, although we'll come back to this if time permits, that is not what these states are doing. What they're doing is saying, we want the United States to be invaded and destroyed, and we're going to do anything we can to rip down the Constitution and any actual law that's consistent with it. But still, though, Victor Davis Hanson is making a great point. Can any citizen simply now vote to declare their hometown or local county immune from, let's even put it this way, unconstitutional, anti-law, so-called legislation? Can a city or county nullify as it pleases? Well, things like the U.S. or IRS tax code, various unconstitutional endangered species laws, or, of course, the total travesty of federal gun registration, red flag laws, and anything else that infringes the once constitutionally protected Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. Or is nullification only permissible if it's in the interest of non-citizens, invaders, lawbreakers, you know, those who want this country destroyed? These asymmetries, and that's an interesting term he picks there, also transcend non-citizens. We've developed, it seems, an entire class of American elite citizens, think Hitlery, Obama, and of course the Biden Fuhrer, who are not subject to enforcement of the law, certainly not the way that it's applied to lesser peons, who are either less influential or not as politically correct. Federal prosecutors, for example, sought to jail retired Lieutenant General Michael Flynn for 6 months for lying to federal agents. But wait, when it comes to Michael Sussman, lawyer for Hitlery? Hardly. What's good for the goose is not good for the gander. And yeah, Orwell was right. Some animals really are a lot more equal than others. They also put Trump subordinate George Papadopoulos in jail for lying to federal prosecutors. Recently, though, in contrast, the FBI stormed onto an airport to arrest a former Trump advisor, Dr. Peter Navarro, for contempt of a mere congressional subpoena. But wait a minute. What about Eric Holder? He brazenly defied congressional subpoenas, plural, and was found in contempt of Congress, an historic first. And you remember what happened to him, or maybe you don't, because he simply went on to, basically, let's call them what they were, greater and greater bribes. So, defying federal law has consequences, well, unless you're allowed to do it. James Clapper, former Director of National Intelligence, how's that for a whopper, confessed that he flat-out lied under oath to a congressional committee. And you know what happened to him? Or, again, maybe you don't. Answer, nothing. How about former CIA Chief John Brennan, who lied under oath twice, and nothing happened to him? He did, though, still get to participate in the insurrection against Trump. Deputy FBI Director, the evil Andrew McCabe, repeatedly lied to federal investigators as acting director of the FBI, and not one of these people were arrested or tried in the manner of any number of Trump associates and constitutionalists and conservatives and even libertarians, people like Flynn, Papadopoulos, Navarro, and the list goes on, especially a whole bunch of people held in the federal gulag since January the 6th. There are lots and lots of reasons, says Victor Davis Hanson, why the looming November midterms will probably see historic levels, and they should, of pushback against the tyrannical Biden regime, along with other Democrat, Socialist, Bolshevik candidates and the entire so-called progressive agenda. Now here, folks, again, I have to note, we'll see, even if it's not reported, how many of those votes end up getting counted. More importantly, whether it's enough to matter, and of course, those who once again will no doubt try to pull the wool over Americans' eyes, probably still think that even if they get caught, they own the just us system, and nothing of consequence, this time too, would dare happen to them. Take your pick among the many self-induced Biden disasters, arguably most of them planned, things like hyperinflation, gasoline and diesel completely unaffordable, out-of-control crime rates, foreign policy humiliations, like Afghanistan, which coincidentally armed terrorists even while honest Americans are being disarmed by that same regime. But one reason, suggests Victor Davis Hanson in conclusion, that voters are furious is rarely expressed. Americans feel that ordinary citizens like them, who follow the rules, obey what, even if they're wrong about it, they think amounts to law, are treated a lot more harshly by what they thought was their own government than are both non-citizens and illegal invaders, and the so-called progressive elites that want them not only ruled over with an iron fist, but in most cases, dead. They're right, he says, they're angry, and hopefully we'll feel the heat from them very soon. That'll do it for now. We are just about out of time, so thanks for being with us, folks. Pay attention to what's going on, because they're not going to tell you on the waste stream. Most of your neighbors won't know, and if you don't, there's going to be a whole lot of people in a whole lot of trouble. So with that, thanks, and may Yahuwah bless you and yours.